Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analyst, my old buddy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Another great show on tap as we begin another great week of lacrosse action. So, Dixie, let's get it. What's up, Dixie?
Not much. You're got a different background. You're doing more traveling. This has been Where's D-Fly? You've been doing a lot of traveling this young lacrosse
spring,
season.
Yeah, I know. We recorded one episode in the Dominican Bahamas, Republic. Right? The Dominican Republic. And now I'm in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And
awesome.
Having a good time, I went down to this really cool museum called Meow Wolf. It's very like modern art, but it's also like a, I don't know if you ever took your kids to like Port Discovery kind of thing. It's a combination of the two. It's just really strange, but really cool. That was fun. We did that yesterday. And then when they have a, not like a wine region, they have a margarita tour that you can go on.
Nice.
45 different places. They have some of the best margaritas, I guess, here in Santa Fe. And it's good.
Did you do like a margarita crawl, like from one to one, and then
well we didn't have a lot of time.
One, you're done.
But my wife and my brother-in-law, Amy's brother, we went to two different places, and it was great. We had a little bit of time, and we went to a couple of spots and had a really fun time.
What's the weather like?
Cold. It's 35 degrees.
Really?
It snowed a couple days ago. Well, what? when I got out of the car when we got here, we flew into Albuquerque and then drove up to Santa Fe. It was snowing. Remember on Monday in Columbia or in Baltimore, there was like those snow squalls.
Yeah.
There was one of those here. And it's rained the last 2 days, which I thought I was in the desert. It never rained.
I know.
Like 300 days of sun.
I thought it would be very arid.
Yeah. It's dry. I mean, things don't really grow here, but it's at 7,200 feet of elevation. So like 1,500 feet higher than Denver. Just basic elevation. And then, there's mountains around. It's in a valley between some mountains. It's beautiful, but takes a while to get used to. I mean, this old man is short of breath, let me tell you. just walking around, you're like, elevation's getting me, man. But it's cool. I've never been here before. One thing they don't have, and I haven't seen any, is lacrosse at all.
No kidding.
You can see I'm wearing one of my Inside Lacrosse shirts today. But I'll wear this around today and see if anybody asks me. But yeah, I haven't seen a goal.
That might be fertile ground for the genesis of the D-Fly Lacrosse Club.
Yeah, maybe I need to start the Santa Fe Lacrosse Club. It would be a good place to be. But
yeah.
So, Dixie, I want to talk to you about the Inside Lacrosse Media Poll this week. Again, I'm not a Princeton fan at all, other than my nephew playing there, right? But
you are.
I am. I become one this season. How are they ranked sixth this week when the previous 3 weeks they beat Georgetown, Rutgers, and Penn, and those three teams are now ranked ahead of them in the poll, and they're sixth because they lost to a really good Yale team on the road by 2 goals. You and I know all the voters. In fact, I think you're one of the voters. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I predicted that exact scenario. I was like thinking one morning on Monday morning, I'm like, they're going to be sixth. Those guys will push them down to sixth and put all those three teams they'd be in successive weeks ahead of them. And that's just the way it's going to be.
So again, I don't put a ton of credence into the poll. I take my time with it. In terms of how much time I think it deserves. I put Princeton fifth. And I tell you why, let's try to get into the heads of the voters, including myself. Yes, wins over Penn, Georgetown, Rutgers. But you lose to a Yale team that maybe doesn't have as much shine as it had in the early, they lost to Penn State, who is struggling once again. Then they lose to Cornell. So they were what, like 11 or 12 last week? So maybe it was that, you lose to a Yale team that might not be as good as people thought they were going to be. And there's still a lot of lacrosse left to be played. But I'm thinking it is such a week-to-week thing. It's a very fickle, very temperamental poll. It really, really is. I'm not saying it. And quite honestly, that's not a good thing. So there's Mark Dixon's explanation rationale to you as to what you're thinking. You're asking good questions. That would be my rationale.
There are some other spots in the polls that we'll get to as we have a conversation about the games this weekend. So let's get right into those games then. There are four top 20 matchups highlighting the schedule this weekend and many other big conference games as conference play heats up. Let's start with games on Saturday. Number 3, Georgetown, 7-1 at number 17, Denver, who's 5-4, right? Number 17 in the Big East opener for both teams. And that game will be at 2:00.
And these two have battled it out over the last couple of years for supremacy in the Big East. And I know we've talked about this before. When you think about the Big East, you tend to think about Denver, whether it's Bill Tierney, whether it's Matt Brown, whether it's the national championship in 2015, whether it's the great players that they've come through that might be a little bit better known than the Georgetown Hoyas. But let's not forget, Georgetown's won the last three Big East championships. And along that, you know, with the automatic qualifier to the NCAA tournament. So this has quietly, or maybe not so quietly, become the Hoyas conference. And this is a huge game for both teams. You better bet, you know, Bill Tierney and his staff are telling the Denver guys, nobody thinks you're any good. That's why you're here. You know, nobody else wanted you. And it's not true for the most part, but, you know, maybe no one uses that, you know, chip on the shoulder kind of psyche than Coach Tierney. And then you have Georgetown, who has done a pretty darn good job of meeting the expectations of the preseason and performing at a high level. Their only blemish on the season is a loss to Princeton. And Princeton turned out to be pretty darn good in 2022. The one thing that I will say about Georgetown is they don't play a ton of guys. Week in, week out, they only play like 18 to 20 guys. And then normally, you know, you see most teams maybe 25, 26 in that neighborhood. And I'd have to go back and look at box scores and tape and things of that nature. But they don't play a ton of dudes. So will that catch up to them as the season goes on is a question that I have. But this is a terrific game.
There's a big game on Saturday between Duke and North Carolina. Old rivals will face off in the national semifinals of the basketball world. But there's another Duke Carolina game that I want to talk about and get your opinion on. When number 16 Duke was 8-4 on the season, 0-1 in the ACC, will travel over to Chapel Hill to face the number 9 Tar Heels, who are 7-2, also 0-1. At 2:00, both teams looking for their first ACC win in lacrosse this season.
I didn't check on you last weekend. You had to be on cloud 9 after the Blue Devils beat. Who'd they have to beat? Texas Tech to go to the Final Four, or who was
they
it?
They beat Texas Tech, and then they had to beat Arkansas.
Arkansas, two tough, that's right.
Two really good defensive teams.
Arkansas got jobbed a little bit with that officiating. I thought they got jobbed a little bit.
The officials have been bad throughout the tournament in a lot of different games. Of course, people who hate Duke would say that the officials were bad. I would argue that there were two
calls. But I thought Gonzaga got jobbed in the round previous against Arkansas. I thought some of the calls in that game were questionable. So maybe that whole regional had some, or that little pocket, that little foursome this past weekend had some questionable officiating.
Well, again, it went across. There were some, I mean, the North Carolina Tar Heels against Baylor, that game was crazy.
I heard that was
no
bad.
Calls, yeah. No calls going North Carolina's way. So yeah, it's been a lot. And then the basketball, I think you had a tweet about this, about the going to the monitor to review plays. Yeah, I mean, it's just been
every 2 seconds these guys are going to the
I know monitor. There's like a minute things left are, in like, a game. Obvious. A minute left in the game and they go check something for a couple different times. You're like, come on, can we just play this game? So Dix, do you think there should be NCAA video review in NCAA lacrosse tournament games?
I absolutely do. I've been saying it for years, and I even tweeted about it this past weekend. It's frustrating. I was watching the regionals in a bar on Friday night having dinner. I was in Chicago, and I'm like losing my mind at them stopping at every play, it seemed, the last 2 minutes and things that were clearly obvious,
yeah.
Like who it went off of, or was it a foul? you know, I understand the level of foul that they're trying to determine, but how useful would that be in lacrosse? You know, every NCAA tournament game is televised. ESPN puts a ton of resources into it. They have great camera work. They have great replays, great angles. Why not incorporate it? You know, you're talking about coaches' livelihoods, players' dreams, and all the hard work that everyone's put in collectively. I mean, you think about 2019, the quarterfinal between Maryland and Virginia, the goal that was given to the Cavaliers, that clearly hit the crossbar. That's one instance. If you have a foul, you know, grading it as a 1, 2, 3 minute penalty, releasable, non-releasable, you know, were they in the crease? Were they not? Dives, you know, with the goal mouth now, path to goal, all that stuff. And I know a couple people countered, you know, with, hey, the NCAA basketball tournament is a lot more money. I get that. But again, I'll point to every game's televised and the resources are there. You also could argue that that is not present in the regular season. So it's inconsistent. I get that. But at this point, those teams have played their way into the tournament. They've been selected. Let's give them all the resources that they need. And then there are other people that are like, well, no way. It slows the game down too much. Too bad. You know, if there's really, you know, in lacrosse, I think it would take something really extraordinary to have people go to the replay monitor to make sure that they got it right. So I don't think it would slow up. You know, I like to say in officiating, you know, late and right, then early and wrong every single time. So I'm absolutely a proponent for replay in college lacrosse.
So getting to the most important Carolina Duke game of the weekend, what do you think is going to happen in this old rivalry between these two lacrosse teams?
Two teams looking for their first ACC wins. Duke has been all over the place this year, very inconsistent. You know, they've struggled against teams. You know, this past weekend, they go into the Carrier Dome and really get dominated by Syracuse. And it's a Duke team that people are trying to figure out. Like, is it the chemistry? Is it the execution? What's the problem? Because
is Duke that good?
I think we talked about it at the beginning of the season. People were saying it's Maryland, Virginia, Duke, and everyone else. And I was like, no, wait a minute. It's not, I'm not sold on Duke. And then, you know, they lost to Jacksonville.
Yeah. So I made a comment earlier about the top 20, like Hopkins or our Blue Jays aren't ranked. And I'm not saying they should be, but Duke is number 16 and they've lost to Jacksonville and they've lost to Syracuse, and Hopkins has beaten both of those teams. And it's just, there's some inconsistencies there. I get it. On paper, Duke is, has a lot of talent and more, eye appealing, eye popping talent on paper than Hopkins does, or some other teams that aren't in the top 20, let's say. And yet they've remained a firm holder in the top 20 every week. They're dropping a little bit, but who have they beaten? Like, what is Duke's signature win? I mean, maybe they'll get it this weekend, I guess, against North Carolina, but they're everything on paper that we've seen them actually do in 2022 points to them being like a, you know, in the top 30 teams in the country, but not at number 16.
It's a fair question. But then, you know, you take other teams that are in the top 20 and you say, are they really better than Duke? I don't know. It can be a reputation thing, you know, kind of a lifetime achievement award, if you will, as to why Duke is still in top 20. But again, you know, it's like one of those things where, I mean, I can remember when Carolina was struggling years ago, and it was that thing like people were saying, we want Carolina to be good. They have to be good. You're getting it with Hopkins right now. Hopkins needs to be good. They have to be good. Maybe Duke's now falling into that category where, you know, they just haven't put it together yet, or, you know, they are good. It's just they've, you know, they've been unlucky, whatever the case may be. But no, I don't think that I don't think your argument is off base in terms of, you know, why is Duke in the top 20 when other teams that you just described aren't? It's fair.
So how do you think they match up this Saturday?
You know, I mean, and you're looking at a Carolina team that has learned from some early, you know, the loss to Ohio State that I think taught the Tar Heels a lot. Chris Gray continues to dazzle, continues to amaze, but they had their own hiccup this past weekend with Bellarmine. Came into Chapel Hill and was leading going into the fourth quarter against North Carolina. And then I think, you know, Carolina woke up and ran off, you know, went on like a 9-0 scoring run to close out that game and win the game going away. But, you know, they were in a dogfight for, you know, for three quarters. And you got to tip your cap to Andrew Whitley and his Bellarmine Knights. I mean, you know, they're 2-9 now in the season, but they came in and you know, he's a coach that works really, really hard. I could tell you, I saw him constantly this summer at all the tournaments and recruiting events. And, you know, they really, really work hard. You know, so maybe this game will be another little like mini wake up for North Carolina. You know, how will they defend Chris Gray? Face-offs will be critical. I mean, you got Tyer, Tucci, Mullins going up against Naso. Defensively, how does Carolina stop Brennan O'Neill? This game ultimately could come down to the midfields. And we've seen some middies emerging over the last couple of weeks for North Carolina. And will the, you know, Nekhai Montgomery's and the Garrett Ledmans, you know, will they step up for Duke to get the job done? Compelling game for sure. Always fun when you get the battle of Tobacco Road. And the stakes, you know, although it's not involving lacrosse, a little higher, you know, with the NCAA basketball Final Four, them tangling a few hours later.
There's another top 20 matchup in the ACC this week when number 18 Syracuse heads out to South Bend to take on the number 14 Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Both teams are 500 or under 500 on the season. Syracuse 4-4, 1-1 in the ACC. Notre Dame's 2-4 overall, 0-1. In the ACC, yet this is still a marquee matchup that both teams need desperately.
Well, and you got to give credit to Syracuse. I mean, they smoked Duke in the Dome this past weekend, and yeah, I didn't really think Syracuse had it in them, quite frankly. And they got the job done. Tucker Dordovic continues to have an amazing season. To me, he's a preseason first team All American, and you know Notre Dame got things corrected, if you will, a little bit against Michigan. Nice win against the Wolverines. And then they go down to Charlottesville, and Virginia was ready for them. You know, a couple of Virginia's talent with the sting of getting run, you know, blown out by Maryland the week before, and they dominated the Irish early. So, you know, you got Syracuse. How do they handle the success of beating Duke? Can they put multiple great performances together? And Notre Dame, like, that's another team, you know, are they that good? Are they a team that is, you know, top 10 worthy? They're certainly top 20 worthy in my opinion, but are they, you know, at the end of this, you know, when this is all said and done, will they be a team that a lot of people thought they would be? And that's a championship weekend contender. I don't think they've been that thus far, but another, you know, great ACC matchup between two teams that have been a little Jekyll and Hyde so far in 2022.
Ivy League is full of ranked teams, and there's a top 10 matchup on the schedule when number 4 Penn will travel to Yale to take on the number 8 Yale Bulldogs at 3:30 on Saturday, and that game is available on ESPN+.
So, yeah, I mean, look, you got this Yale team. We talked about them a little earlier, beating Princeton this past weekend, and then Penn handing Cornell their first loss of the season. So two teams coming off of really, really big wins. And it'll be a fun game. It'll be a physical game. And again, it's so funny how the Ivy League, you get varying styles, contrast in styles or methods, and Penn, you know, high scoring. They want to run up and down the field. But I think they showed that they could slog it out as well as they did last weekend against Cornell, getting the win. You know, Yale's a team, you know, lunch pail, blue collar. They want to beat you up, you know, very physical, very strong. And they had to be a little bit more athletic last weekend to knock off Princeton. So I'm looking forward to this game. And it's another, you know, another reason to say, thank goodness the Ivy League is back. They really haven't skipped a beat. And this should be another really tough contest.
On Sunday night, there's Big Ten lacrosse action. I think you're doing the game when Johns Hopkins will travel to face number 5 Rutgers. Before we get into that, you had a chance to sit down with Rutgers head coach Brian Brecht. Let's bring in Coach Brecht to hear how the season is going for the Rutgers Scarlet Knights.
We are pleased to be joined on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast by Rutgers head coach Brian Brecht. Coach, thanks for spending a few minutes with us as you prepare for this weekend's game.
My pleasure, Mark. Thanks for having me.
2022. It's kind of like happy days are here again, almost to a certain extent. You get to play out of conference games. You had a fall, a good preseason. How has 2022 been from a logistical standpoint and a mental standpoint for the Rutgers Scarlet Knights?
Yeah, you know, I thought our guys handled last year extremely well. Very proud of them for that. And it's nice to, I guess, we tried to keep it business as usual last year to keep a routine. But it's nice to, you know, with everything else around us, getting back to business as usual. I think it's, you know, it's great for our, you know, players to play in front of fans and, you know, travel and not have as much restrictions and, you know, family and friends and our alumni being around as much as they can now, as opposed to last year. I think that's the camaraderie and the family atmosphere of our program. You've certainly seen that in 2022, which was maybe missing in 2021.
You guys are currently 9-1 and ranked anywhere from 4 to 6, depending upon which poll you're looking at. What is it about Rutgers lacrosse? Every year you seem to take a step forward, a step forward, a step forward. What has been the key during that process, during your tenure, in continuing the ascension of this program?
No, I think, you know, like you said, a step forward. I think that's like that with everything, relationships, business, academics. I think the continuity, the consistency, we have a great group of guys in our locker room that, you know, when I go back to a few years ago, you know, with some of the guys we've had that laid the foundation and did some of the heavy lifting, and, you know, we're, you know, maximizing off the fruits of their labors. And but I think our recruiting has gotten better. I think our development, you know, I think just the, you know, how much the guys care in our locker room. Our guys really love to play lacrosse. They like being around each other. They like doing the extra work and, you know, spending time with the coaches, watching film and going out on their own, shooting, speed and agility stuff with the ladder. So, you know, the new Rodkin Center has really helped that. But even before we had the new building last year, a lot more guys were doing the extra work outside of practice. And I think, you know, they just enjoy being around each other. I think, you know, the same thing with the coaches. You know, the coaches have a great relationship and the bounce ideas off each other and the experiment and try things, whether it's drills or game planning. I think, you know, everyone's just working together and, you know, trying to maximize everyone's strengths.
One of those things I think that's really helped you is the strength of schedule. You guys have matured into a more competitive schedule, particularly over the last 2 or 3 years. The 2022 docket, you've had some great games against some really tough teams. Is there a game or two that stand out as being maybe the most impactful as you get ready for this Big Ten slate?
You know, I don't know if there's, you know, I think we treat each game, you know, we want to take care of Rutgers first and foremost and get better. And, you know, I thought we had a great fall and had a lot of returning players coming back with a lot of experience. And, you know, the energy was very high. But for some reason, I don't know if we had a great January. And I don't know, I can't put my finger on it. But we had a little slow start, in my opinion. So I really thought that week of Army, having a chance to, you know, play a top 10 team, a game that we dropped, you know, the last time we played them before COVID, I thought I saw a real big step in practice that week. And obviously, it, you know, came to fruition on game day. And then, you know, I think another big step came, you know, this past week before getting ready for, you know, to start a Big Ten play. You know, just practices last week, drills were at a different level, more focused, locked in, you know, more competitive. Development was, you know, at a higher level. So I would say those 2 weeks of practice, you know, were probably two that stand out to me, you know, throughout this season, as far as, you know, taking steps forward and growing as a program.
It's really cool. There's a couple of things that are, like, you know, very much Rutgers lacrosse. And I know last year when we had you on the podcast, we asked you about Rick Mercurio, the announcer that does some of the games on BTN Plus. Another thing unique to Rutgers lacrosse is the horn after goals are scored by Rutgers. I can remember a couple of years ago where the horn got stuck for an extended period of time. But what is the genesis of the horn? How did it come about? And really, you know, kind of a corny question, but like, what does it mean to the program and the fans?
Yeah, you know, it has been a staple of ours. You know, if they're moving to High Point Solution Stadium, and I don't think I can take credit for that. That's Jordan Ozer and our sports information and the technical crew that run the game and the ribbon board and the, you know, replays and everything. So, but it's become a, I think our alumni love it. You know, our players love it. You know, being in that stadium, you know, with a great crowd here in New Jersey on a nice night with a big game, it's electrifying, and the sound effects and everything, you know, come alive, you know, with the horn.
In a season where you've had a lot of positives, you know, there has been some sad moments, and maybe none more sad than the passing of Tom Hayes a couple of weeks ago. I know you guys are honoring Coach Hayes, wearing his name on the back of your jerseys. But I was wondering if you could describe your relationship with Coach Hayes and what he meant and still means to Rutgers lacrosse.
Yeah, you know, obviously you mentioned Rick Mercurio's name, and, you know, obviously he was my high school coach at Sachem on Long Island, and played here for Coach Hayes. And you know, back in the day before all the club, you know, teams and the tournaments, there were, you know, overnight camps that went from Sunday to Friday, and Rutgers and Coach Hayes had probably the biggest, you know, lacrosse camp. You know, so that was my first experience. You know, did some, you know, youth and, you know, travel lacrosse, but my first lacrosse camp as a player was coming to the Tom Hayes, you know, lacrosse camp when I was a fifth, sixth grader. And then, you know, fast forward a little bit, the first camp that I worked as a coach after my freshman year in college was the Tom Hayes lacrosse camp. So, you know, Coach Hayes has done a lot for not only Rutgers lacrosse, but, you know, the growth of college lacrosse, you know, lacrosse here in New Jersey and the United States, and also internationally, you know, everything that he's done to grow the game. And, you know, he's certainly going to be very well missed by a lot of people from the Rutgers community to the lacrosse community in general.
The transfer portal is something that's, you know, very much in the forefront of men's college lacrosse these days. And Rutgers is a program that has benefited from the addition of some of the transfers. This year is no different when you talk about players like Ryan Cameron and Mitch Bartolo, amongst others. What's the key in when you're evaluating the transfer portal in, you know, kind of thinking through how can this player help us and what may the be the effect on my current team?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, and one that you know, I get asked a lot, and, you know, very thankful that Rutgers University is very attractive academically to some of these high achievers, and you know, the players that we've you know, had come join us from the transfer portal, you know, they've been great students academically and want to, you know, get a master's, and two, you know, they've been you know, lacrosse rats and junkies and guys that love the game of lacrosse and want to keep playing at the highest level and use and exhaust all their years of eligibility. So that's been a win-win. And then, you know, it's really no different than any other recruiting. I mean, we're going to recruit players that will help us, you know, not only on the field, but off the field, but also complement the guys that are currently in the locker room. So whether it's a freshman coming in, like Shane Knobloch last year, being a starter as a freshman and an impact player, and rewind, you know, 5 years ago, Kieran Mullins came in 2017 as a freshman and complimented, you know, Jules Hennenberg and Michael Rexrode as a freshman, being able to play right away for us. So, you know, it's the same thing now, you know, with the COVID year being, you know, awarded to guys that want to continue playing. What a great fit, you know, here at Rutgers to get a master's, the School of Business, you know, right in the shadows of New York City if they want, you know, Wall Street and those aspirations. But I also think that there's so many other master's programs we have. You don't have to just be, you know, a business student. But, you know, I guess the best way to maybe answer your question is we have seniors on the team this year, you know, that have been at Rutgers for the last 4 years. And, you know, I owe it to them to, you know, give them the, you know, the best experience wearing that Scarlet Knight jersey before they graduate in May. So, you know, Ryan Gallagher's and Bobby Russo's and Ethan Rawls. And how about, you know, David Sprock, unfortunately, before the injury, and Ross Scott. I mean, you know, they want to, you know, have the best experience on the field. So, as you mentioned, the guys that have joined us have really complimented them and been great additions both on and off the field, you know, for us.
Two players that have had a huge impact on your team this year. One is a known, and one was not as well known, but has really emerged. And the known Colin Kirst, regarded by many as one of the best goaltenders, if not the best goaltender in the country. And then Ross Scott is doing a tremendous job on the offensive end. Wonder if you could just describe Colin and Ross and the impact they've had this year. And are you surprised by a guy like Ross Scott when a lot of us so-called experts are like, you know, where'd this guy come from?
Yeah, no, I mean, both of them have been fantastic players in our program for the last couple of years. You know, Colin obviously made a name for himself last year and, you know, was the anchor of the defense, you know, had a great year individually in the goal, really was the catalyst behind some great stops and outletting and decision-making in the clearing and the NASCAR, you know, early offense for us. But, you know, Ross Scott, you know, once again, I mentioned Shane Knobloch last year and Kieran Mullins a couple of years ago when he came in as a freshman. You know, Ross came in the COVID year, and Ross, you know, was the only freshman that played in 2020. And, you know, when you had Kieran Mullins and, you know, Adam Shalambides and Ryan Gallagher was playing a little bit of attack back then, we ran him out of the box and he played, you know, in every game and significant missing minutes as a freshman for us. And then, you know, more of an impact last year, you know, at the midfield position. So I think internally, the guys on the team and, you know, certainly Coach Ceramet and myself, you know, it was just a matter of time before, you know, unfortunately, every program is going to graduate great seniors. And Kieran and AC were two great ones here at Rutgers. And you know, Connor Kirst coming in and, you know, those three were dynamic together. And it was just a matter of time before, you know, Ross was moved from midfield to attack to, you know, be on the field for, you know, 60 minutes. And he's still growing, but, you know, he got some great mentoring and was like a sponge, I think, the last couple of years, soaking everything in that Kieran and AC had to share with them and him, I should say. And, you know, it's, you know, he's still learning and growing, but, you know, he's certainly a great young man, a tireless worker. And, you know, it's funny, you asked about those two. Those two are always the last ones to leave the field. And on days off, they're always out in the bubble or on the field, you know, getting extra shots and coming back in the evening, you know, to get some extra shots and work. So they've really been a great tandem, you know, Colin getting the shots and Ross, you know, developing, you know, his game a little bit more, you know, outside of practice.
As we look ahead this weekend, the Johns Hopkins Blue Jays come to High Point Solutions Stadium, pay a visit to Piscataway. We're excited to call the game on the Big Ten Network, 7 o'clock Sunday night. Pete Medhurst and myself. When you look at Johns Hopkins in 2022, what do you see, and kind of what's your focus this week in preparation?
Yeah, I think, you know, as we saw firsthand, a team really develop and get better as the season went on last year, and you know, certainly finished the season a lot better than they started. And I think you know, you're seeing the same thing now. They're developing, you know, each week. They had a very competitive schedule in front of them. And, you know, they're a team that has a very high level skill set, lefties and righties, and very creative. And certainly, you know, we're going to have to be laser focused and locked into, you know, making sure we, you know, do things the right way, because they can certainly, you know, make you pay for your mistakes.
The Sunday night game on the Big Ten Network has been incredibly well received by fans. We're excited to bring it back after a one-year hiatus with the conference-only configuration last year. But to be playing on Sunday night at 7 o'clock, how excited do your players get, and what does it mean to your program?
Yeah, no, we're excited. I think our players love it. You know, our alumni love it. The coaches love the home Sunday night games. You know, maybe they didn't like the away Sunday night games as much, but you know, I agree. I think it's been great for lacrosse. It's been great for the Big Ten, and certainly, you know, great for Rutgers and our student athletes. They've enjoyed all the opportunities they've had to, you know, play on the Big Ten.
Last question for you, Coach, and we're asking that of all our guests this year on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast. So, COVID, a lot of downtime, maybe, you know, in between trying to manage a lacrosse team and family responsibilities, and et cetera. Anything that you are currently watching right now or listening to any certain types of music to help you, quote unquote, relax during what can be a pretty intense season?
Probably not the best, you know, question for me. I'm probably not really into too much of the Netflix and the Hulu stuff. So I do like recording the games and watching them at night, you know, and just being aware of what's going on outside the Big Ten and obviously what you guys are doing with the other games on the weekends being spread out Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays. So music is, you know, Sirius XM radio has been great. So very diverse. I can go up and down the dial as far as the trip to and from office, you know, getting a little bit of everything each day.
What are your top three channels on Sirius?
I have a little bit of everything. So on there, you know, little hip hop nation, but we also got classic vinyl and classic. So some of that stuff is good to throw in with a little Dave Matthews.
Two of mine. I love classic vinyl. And I think I call Rock the Bells Radio now. The old
Rock the Bells Radio. Yep.
Yeah, they're good ones. They're good ones. I love the fact that you didn't say Bruce Springsteen, because Dan and I always go back and forth. He loves Springsteen. I'm not a Springsteen guy. I'm not sure where you stand, and I'm not asking you to make that proclamation being in Jersey. But
if I had to be honest, growing up on Long Island, probably more of a Billy Joel guy than.
I like it. I like it. You and I. Okay, I knew there was a reason we connected. I like Billy Joel as well. Good stuff. Coach, we can't thank you enough for stopping by the podcast. Appreciate your time. And best of luck to you and the Scarlet Knights this coming weekend and for the rest of the season.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it.
Dixie, last year we asked every coach about what restaurants they like to go to and eat when they're traveling on the road. And everyone had great answers for us, and they love talking about that. This year, we've been asking people what they like to do to relax when they're not, well, you know, to get away from lacrosse a little bit. And I'm just not satisfied with any of the answers. We're getting a lot of coach speak, not only from Brian, but from guys all throughout the season. Do we need to change up that last question?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, when coaches are in season, they're different. You know, it's a different animal. I was talking with a former coach a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about something, and it was about a program in particular, and something, and he goes, I'm definitely going to tell Coach so and so about this. I'll probably wait till the season's over, you know, because they're really busy right now. So you know, it's like it's almost like between February and May, their lives kind of, you know, go one way. So you can't blame them. But Coach Breck did say, you know, when we got done the interview, I stopped recording and we were just, you know, saying goodbye. And he's like, I'm sorry about that answer. He goes, but my life is family, friends, and Rutgers lacrosse. You know, that's it. I'm really, and so I think those guys fall into that category quite a bit. But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we've gotten some good answers.
Yeah, and again, I'm not knocking Brian in particular. I'm just saying, like, across the board, it's kind of the same thing every week. And I'm like, maybe we need to change.
Well, Coach Busick and Coach Madelon, both of them were like The Office, you know.
And Coach Galloway was a big Office fan. I think young guys are all Office fans. That's what they throw on.
Right, right. The only other question that I'm not sorry I didn't ask, but I meant to ask was a coach, and it could have been, you know, he may not have answered it, but like, you know, when Rutgers forgot their jerseys against Loyola.
Oh, yeah, like, that's right. The game was delayed.
Yeah. 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 So I could have, like, I mean, that had to be a, like, you know, your heart just drops, you know, when you're like, what? We're ready to play this game. We don't have our uniforms. So I forgot. That's bad on me.
But at this game, you're calling this game on Sunday night, Big Ten lacrosse action on Sunday night. I love it. Hopkins needs this. Both teams are 1-0 in the Big Ten, and this is a big game.
It really is. And you look at Hopkins, gave the homecoming fans a nice treat with a good win over Michigan, and they really changed things around. Jacob Angeles running attack, 7 points, career high. DeSimone back at midfield had a nice game. No Joey Epstein, really, except I think he was on one extra man opportunity.
Notably absent.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see if that continues moving forward. You know, Garrett Degnan continues his outstanding 2022 season. I know you lament oftentimes that, you know, not many or no Hopkins players have been on, like, you know, preseason All-American list. I think Degnan's an All-American in 2022. I do. And the question is, do you put him at midfield or attack? You know, he's had a terrific season. And this is a Hopkins team that really kind of dominated Rutgers in last year's Big Ten semifinals, predominantly with a midfield group of Jonathan Pashko, Casey McDermott, and Brendan Grimes. They ran by the short sticks for Rutgers seemingly all game long. I'm sure that's something that the Scarlet Knights haven't forgotten, and they've got, you know, Tommy Coyne and Brendan Kamish are back. And, you know, this is a Rutgers team that fell behind at home 3-0 last weekend to Ohio State and then blitzed the Buckeyes. 18-7 was the final, which is incredible when you consider the talent of Ohio State. They got out to a 3-goal lead, were feeling really good about themselves, and then Rutgers was able just to change that in a big, big way. Goalies in this one will be big. You know, Kirsten's played steady for Hopkins. I thought he had a nice rebound game against Michigan. You know, Kirst, one of the best, if not the best in the country. This will be a fun game. And we can't, you know, we came back this past Sunday night, Maryland, Penn State. This one will be myself and Pete Medhurst, but so thankful that Sunday night on BTN is back.
Yeah, it's a great way to, like, close out the weekend with a big lacrosse game that's well-produced. And, you know, I don't particularly like the guys calling the games. I think they could do a lot better than you on the call.
Yeah, you're not alone. You're not alone.
I think you guys do a great job. I think you and Joe do the best.
Thank you. And as long as we can win the Flynn demographic, we're okay.
It starts, you know, it starts at home, man. You gotta win one fan at a time. Win over.
That's
one
right. That's right. You chip away.
All right, Dixie. A great weekend of lacrosse on tap, and as we said, it'll culminate and round up with your calling the Hopkins Rutgers game. So, Dixie, it's time for the give and go, and this podcast is going to drop on April 1st, which many people refer to as April Fool's Day. I want to see if you have any good April Fool's stories. One of my favorite, like, prank or April Fool's joke that someone played many, many years ago. I think this was, I was working in the athletic department at Hopkins. Tony Seaman was the lacrosse coach, and he had like a running April Fool's prank thing with another employee in the athletic department. Our old buddy, AB, his wife, Shelly, used to go back and forth. And there was one year Hopkins was going to go down to play North Carolina, and they're going to take the bus trip. And, you know, that's, what's that, like a 5.5-6 hour drive from Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And the Hopkins Friday afternoon or whatever. And Hopkins is waiting for the buses to show up. The lacrosse team's got their gear. Everybody's sort of got their bags outside, sitting outside the Newton H. White Athletic Center, and up rolls two yellow school buses to take the team to North Carolina. And Tony Seaman's like, what's this? And then, like, the bus drivers were in on the joke. And I remember them saying, like, we're going to Chapel Hill. You guys want to load up your bags? And Tony Seaman was like, no, this is not, no, we can't do it. And he goes in.
No, Coach Seaman wasn't like that. He was like, no, what is this? This got to be a mistake. It's got to be a mistake.
So, you know, Shelly had arranged this, and there were two coach buses that were just, like, you know, sitting somewhere on, like, University Parkway waiting for her to call, and the buses, the real buses, to roll up. But, oh man, Coach Seaman, she got him. Let me put it that way. She got him. And, that was one of my favorites that I can remember. You got any stories like that?
Yeah. Mine are more business related. I can remember one year I called the person. So, you know, I'm in pharmaceutical sales, and the person who hired me to the job is no longer in Maryland. And I remember calling him, and I told him I was leaving the company, taking a job at a competitor. And he was, like, astonished. He couldn't believe it. And I just remember keeping the joke going for like 10 or 15 minutes. And I finally let him off the hook. So that's not, like, super, super, you know, creative, but his reaction made it all the worthwhile. I thought it was going to be something that lasted maybe 2 or 3 minutes, and it ended up lasting, like, you know, 5 times that. So right. That was funny. The other ones that I've done. So there's two of my coworkers. One went and got gas one day and drove away, forgetting to put the nozzle back. The nozzle was still in her car.
Oh, geez.
So it, like, ripped the thing off. And then, so what I did was on April Fool's Day, this was before we really had cell phones, like before everyone really had like cell phones all the time, every time. We had like a company voicemail. And I remember calling the company voicemail from a local hospital saying I was, you know, Dan Flynn from the EPA. And we had footage of you from the local, you know, Shell station on this date. You know, we'd like to talk to you about the environmental damage that you've caused. And I left the phone number. I was using a payphone because this was back when we had payphones as well. So this is like the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And I left the payphone number. And I just remember seeing her at a meeting or something. She's like, oh, my God, I got this. The EPA's calling me or something like that. I keep calling this number and no one's picking up. And I don't know what the hell's going on. And I guess finally somebody answered the phone. And she's like, is this so-and-so for the EPA? And they're like, no, you're calling such and such hospital. It's the payphone or something. So right away, she figured out that it was me. But that was a really good one. Then a second one at the same medical center, another coworker of mine was parking and hit a brick partition and like damaged it a little bit. And she did the right thing. She reported it to security and everything. I did the same thing saying that I was a security guard and we had further questions and the police wanted to question her and left the same phone number for the payphone. And she kept calling that one as well. And then I got wind that she was frustrated because no one was answering the phone. And finally somebody did. And she had known what I had done to the other person.
Oh, that's good.
And got a good laugh at it. And so she got had. So those are two of my better pranks that I played throughout my life.
Those are good. Everybody be careful today. If you're listening to this on Friday, these kind of things, be on the lookout. Be on the lookout. All right.
And social media is normally pretty good about that. There'll be something, you know, from this morning that we'll be laughing at or shaking our heads. Hey, you know what we didn't talk about?
What's that?
We didn't talk about the Will Smith Chris Rock slap.
Oh, geez. Do we have to do this?
Oh.
No, we don't.
But I know we don't. But it's just dominated the news this week.
Yeah, no, it's so stupid. And he should never have done that. That seems like a good place to stop. We would like to thank our guest this week, Rutgers head coach Brian Brecht. Best of luck this weekend and throughout the rest of the season. If you like what you've heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend, share the love. It's free. Always love to hear from you, so give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse, and I'm simply at D_FLY. And remember, stay positive, test negative, and as always, enjoy the games.